of Annalee and Kat will tell you the facts from shows on or off Broadway. Your bi-weekly show, follow Lloyd and Nello, listen to what they have to say. This podcast won't run a week with Kat and Slee.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lucille Ball as Fruma Sarah in the NBC live production of Fiddler on the Roof.
Ooh, and I'm Roger Bart as Uncle Fester in the La Jolla Playhouse Addams Family.
And this podcast won't run a week, your bi-weekly musical theater podcast where we talk about musicals. That is good casting.
It is good casting, is it not?
I would be very into that.
Yeah, he would be so good.
He would be so good. And I feel like the first thought would be Gomez, but no.
No.
Uncle Fester.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm probably thinking of it because Christopher Lloyd.
Sure.
Who he's playing Christopher Lloyd's character in
of
Back
course,
to the Future.
Yes.
So.
It makes sense.
Listen.
It all makes sense.
How are you feeling about Back to the Future?
You know, I love Roger Bart. I think he's so funny, and I'm always excited to see him in something. But the show as a whole, not super excited, but, like, I would go see it.
Yeah, that's how I feel, yeah. I mean, I feel like we haven't executed a movie musical since Legally Blonde.
I agree. I feel like Legally Blonde was the last really solid movie musical.
I mean, Heathers is great, but it deviates from the movie so much.
Exactly. Heathers is like a different beast.
Yeah.
Although I am curious, because I still haven't seen Some Like It Hot, how similar that is to the movie.
It's pretty similar from what I can remember. I hadn't seen the movie in a long time.
Sure.
But
just from the, like, clips I've seen, it something about the energy just feels like a totally different thing.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. You should see it. It's wonderful.
I would like to see it.
I mean, I hear the, like, critiques of it.
Of course.
I really hear that. And as, like, a cis woman, like, I don't really have a stake in that argument. So, you know,
yeah.
I feel totally okay to be corrected in that way. But I will say, just from, like, a musical that I went in with low expectations on, I had a really wonderful time.
That's great.
Yeah. And Jay Harrison Gee was amazing.
A star.
Amazing.
A star.
Yeah.
Love them. Love, love, love them. Well, how the hell are ya?
You know, I'm fine. The show Stranger Things has officially closed. And yeah, sayonara.
R.I.P.
Good riddance. And it's real sad, but, like, you know, I'm feeling just grateful and just kind of looking for the next steps in life and can focus a lot more on other projects, i.e., I don't know, a podcast maybe.
Maybe.
What's
a podcast?
You wouldn't get it.
Probably not.
But yeah, that's, you know, that. And then I'm heading to Charleston/Charlotte for my brother's birthday.
Ooh.
Which will be very fun. I'm very excited to get out of the city for a second. Yeah, I haven't taken, like, a vacation in a long time.
Yeah.
So this will be really fun.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
Love that.
How about you?
I'm good. We are, as we record this, entering our last weekend of shows for Assassins, which makes me sad, but I have transitional issues where I get really, really sad when things end, and it kind of doesn't, this is not anything to say about what the process of Assassins has meant to me, but it really doesn't matter that much how much something has meant to me, but when it ends, I always get really, really, like, blue. Mm-hmm. So not looking forward to that, but you know, I'm always excited to have any moment I can be on stage is always great.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
And it's so good.
Thank you.
You guys do such a good job.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel, and I'm sure that you understand this experience, but I've done a lot of shows. I've had a lot of castmates in my life, but there are some shows where, like, things just align and you meet people and you're like, where have you been my whole life? I feel like I should have known you for much longer.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about a lot of the people in this cast. So sad that it's ending and I don't have an excuse to see them multiple times a week, but excited to force them to be my friend outside of the show.
Force is the best word.
Force, yes. They know. They know I won't let them get away too easily.
They know.
But yeah, that's going on. By the time this episode comes out, the show will be closed. So ask me then.
You know what I, though, like, realized? Because I also get really bad post-show blues. Mm-hmm. I have recognized, though, that, like, the older I've gotten, I think that it's easier to, like, wrestle with.
Yeah.
You know? And just say, like, you know, this is, it's really sad, but I think realizing what makes me sad about it, and it's that I'll miss my friends, but guess what? You can see them whenever you want.
Absolutely. Well, I remember being, like, a kid, like a little kid, and being just devastated when a show, like, truly heartbroken when a show would end. And I would have, like, the audition for the next show the next day, Monday.
Yeah.
We closed on the Sunday. Next audition was the next day. But I was, like, heartbroken. You could not tell me I would ever get over it.
Yeah.
Weeping. Ugly crying. But now as an adult, it's a little different. Because it's like, well, I don't know when I'm going to audition for something again. Because I'm doing a lot of other stuff. But also, it's like, I'm not going to necessarily see all of my friends from Assassins the next day at auditions for the next show. And that's on being an adult.
Yeah. It truly is on being an adult.
Truly. But speaking of adults and children and shows that I did as a kid. Wow. Okay. We're talking about Oliver.
Oliver. Something
that but boy wanted more. Yeah. We're doing a special little series on the shows that City Center is doing this summer. For their Encore series.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. Very topical.
Very topical.
Topical.
Yeah. So I saw Oliver at City Center. And I had never seen Oliver. I went in being like, not unlike when I went to go see Justin Bieber in concert. I went in going, I won't know one song from this show.
Yeah.
I knew most of the songs from this show.
Yeah.
And didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And side note, I went to go see Justin Bieber a year ago and went in going, I think I know maybe one of his songs and I know they're not going to play it because it's going to be from an album, a new album that I haven't listened to. No, I knew literally every single song that he played. There was not one song where I was like, I've never heard this.
What's this?
Yeah, no, it was, I knew every song. He even played Baby.
I mean, you have to. You have to.
Imagine singing a song that you got popular singing when you were, what?
12.
12?
Embarrassing.
Delta Dawn. You know that song? It's not Justin Bieber.
I don't think Justin Bieber's ever sang a song like that. It sounds familiar.
It's not Tanya Tucker. What is the woman's name?
Wynette?
Yes.
Tammy Wynette?
I think it's Tammy Wynette. It was her popular song, and she sang it when she was 13. And y'all go listen. It's called Delta Dawn. Go listen to it, because you would never guess that she was 13 years old singing that song.
Man, she always had a voice, though.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But yeah, so it's no Delta Dawn.
Well, it's his Delta Dawn, though.
Truly. Yeah, so I did not know the story of Oliver. That's not true either. I kind of knew the gist. Like, I knew Nancy's plot that she is in an abusive relationship, but I didn't know how she fit into the story.
Sure.
Other than she was in a relationship with Bill and it was abusive. So, because I've sung As Long As He Needs Me, so I did the bare minimum of research to figure out what was happening. Went in with, like, okay, well, I know this song for sure.
Yeah.
Then the boys came out, and they're like, food, glorious food. And I was like, oh!
All right!
Of course I know this song, and I know it's from Oliver. Also, where is love? Also, consider yourself. What was the other one?
Oompa-pa.
Love that one. Goes. And otherwise, I think that's all of them.
Did you know the, who will buy my sweet red roses?
No. That's the first time I had heard that song.
I love that song.
Yeah.
Love it. Love, love, love.
Yeah. So, new... I wouldn't say I was a huge fan, but I knew the hits.
Of course.
I listened to the Greatest Hits album. Of course. Right?
Yeah.
Great. So, Oliver is obviously based off of Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens. This was the first musical based off of an Charles Dickens novel. Christmas Carol came after.
Oh.
But this was the first one, which is super great, because then we got Edwin Drood and... other ones.
And Christmas Carol.
I said Christmas Carol. Is that it?
I'm honestly, I feel like there should be like a Great Expectations.
You have Great Expectations that they'll make that musical.
I do. I was forced to read that book. It was summer reading for my freshman year of high school. And I don't remember most of it, but I do remember loving the woman who she got like left the altar, and she like stayed in her wedding dress, and she stopped all of the clocks in the house at the time she was supposed to get married, and the like wedding feast is like rotting on the table, like nothing changed.
Whoa.
She's incredible, but she also is like so bitter, and she like raises this little girl named, I think Estella is the little girl's name, to just be cruel to men. And like she's this beautiful girl, and she grows up and she's this beautiful stunning girl, but she's just ruthless.
That does sound like that needs to be a stage production.
I agree. That's what I remember. Maybe I'm wrong. Listeners, tell me if I'm wrong, but that's what I remember.
I also feel like I need to read this book. I've never read it.
Oh, man. It's about a little boy named Pip.
What in the world is his, is the little, like, him little writing about
orphan
little...
boy?
Yeah.
I don't know. He had a thing. He's like, I know a lot about little orphan boys, so I'm gonna write about little orphan boys. Maybe he was a little orphan boy.
Maybe.
I don't know enough about Charles Dickens to
hold on to a second here.
If that's correct or not. What is that woman's name?
What if I typed in Charles Dickens and the first thing it said was, little orphan boy, Charles Dickens.
Yeah. Oh, it's Mrs. Havisham. That is the woman's name.
Oh, I've heard that name. Also, excuse me, but I made a really funny joke and you just completely brushed it off.
Oh. What, wait, repeat the joke?
I don't want to do it again.
Okay, well, I'll hear it when the podcast comes out, I guess.
And you'll hear how bitchy you sounded when you went, haha, her name is Mrs. Havisham or whatever you
I
just
wasn't
said.
Really listening.
If I know honest, you weren't.
Because I wanted to know her name! I'm sorry.
Let's see.
I'm a bad friend.
You are. And don't you forget it. Nope, he was not an orphan.
Oh.
But he did move around a lot. So.
Alright, well, same thing.
Same thing. Great. So, this musical premiered in London in the 1960s, and it had a record-breaking run on the West End. And then it came to Broadway in 63, but it didn't do super well in New York. New York audiences just it didn't have the same effect on a New York audience as it did in London.
Of course.
It's had many revivals in London specifically. It was at one point in the UK, it was the number one produced show. Mm. So like Our Guys and Dolls is their Oliver.
That's so funny.
It was like the highest, the most done musical of like community theaters and regional theaters and all that stuff in London at one point. Isn't that cool? Or I shouldn't say in London, in the UK.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Which again, Our Guys and Dolls. It has a movie adaptation from 1968, which probably if you know this musical, you've probably seen that. And it did win it won 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture.
I don't think I knew that. That's crazy.
I've never seen the movie.
I think I saw it. I probably watched it while I was in it as a kid. That's absolutely fair. Something I would have done. But that would have been over a decade ago, so I definitely wouldn't remember.
Much over a decade.
Just a decade ago.
Maybe 2 decades.
No, almost 2 decades ago. But it,
how old were you?
I had to have been like 12.
Oh.
So almost 2 decades ago. Just over a decade ago.
Just over a decade.
I'm young at heart.
Yeah. Yes, you 22-year-old. let's see here. Oliver received the Tony Award for Best Original Score in 1963. And, you know, its big songs are Food, Glorious Food, Consider Yourself, and I'd Do Anything, which I had not heard that song before.
It's very cute.
It is really cute. I do have to say, before entering this discussion.
Yes.
This felt like Annie did it better when I saw this show.
I can understand that argument for sure. I think that the stories are so vastly different. It's very difficult to compare them.
I kind of disagree under the, like, the base message of it.
Okay.
You've got the Miss Hannigan, you've got the Miss Hannigan who is like, or whatever, what trope would Miss Hannigan be in this? Not Bill, but maybe Fagin.
Maybe. But like Fagin isn't like really abusive to the kids from what I remember.
Well, no, but Miss Hannigan kind of takes a lot of different structures that's true. This show kind of has too many characters.
Sure.
It condenses it into, like, this one person teaches these lessons to Annie, right?
Yeah.
Where Fagin, earlier I was saying Fabian by accident, Fagin and Nancy, well, not Nancy, Fagin and Bill and the,
Mr. Bumble.
Yes, the funeral directors. Like, they kind of all teach the same lesson to Oliver that Miss Hannigan teaches Annie.
Sure.
And then we've got the Grace/Nancy. And then Mr. Warbucks is obviously the old rich guy at the end, right?
Of course.
So I know it's not exactly the same, of course. And Oliver is much darker. But it just, like, I'd Do Anything is basically what's the song in Annie?
You're never fully dressed without a smile.
No. Oliver Warbucks and her sing together.
Oh, together at last. Yes. Together forever. I disagree. I don't think it's that at all.
Which?
I'd do anything that I'd do anything for you, dear. Anything.
Yeah.
No. No. I'd Do Anything is like a little play acting song. And it's not with the, like, the savior of the orphan.
That sounds terrible. Isn't it Nancy?
Well, it's, so I'd Do Anything is a 4-person song. It's right. Nancy and the Artful Dodger. They sing it together. Mm-hmm. And I have a whole story about why I have such a vivid memory of this. It's Oliver and Nancy's little protege, Bette, who I played when I did it. And it's this little, like, play-acting song of them being, like, making fun of the wealthy people that they like to steal from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much a, like, oh, like, we're together, everything is great, and we're having fun singing about it, but we're together forever. Like, we're paired off. You got me, I got you. It's, the song itself is just a moment of, like, I think showing Nancy's humanity with the children.
Which I feel, well, maybe I'm saying the wrong song then, because I'm talking about the Grace arc.
Okay.
This is, like, Grace's moment in, maybe it's the, we got Annie, maybe it's that moment or something. I don't know.
Maybe. She just doesn't sing it with Oliver at all.
Well, it doesn't have to be that she sings it with Oliver. I guess. It's the same story. It's, like, the same story being told.
I guess I just disagree.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Yeah.
You know what? I quit. No, it's But the reason, I'll tell an embarrassing story about myself and then we can move on. But the reason I have such a vivid memory of this song and doing it is because I had my first kiss during this song. My very first kiss. It was an accident. Which sounds crazy, but it literally was an accident. We were blocking it. And during the song, Oliver, played by a little boy named Hiram Poplin. Shout out, Hiram. I know you're listening.
Shout out, Hiram Poplin. I know you're listening.
He was supposed to kiss me on the cheek. But the director, Melanie, I guess wasn't clear. I thought I was supposed to kiss him on the cheek. It was like, okay, so you're going to kiss you on the cheek and da-da-da-da-da. I don't remember it being very clear to me. So he went to kiss me on the cheek and I went to kiss him on the cheek. And so we both turned and then we kissed on the mouth. And that was my first kiss. And it was in front of everybody. Mm. It was in front of the cast that was on stage, all of the parents in the house. Luckily, my parents weren't there, but they came in soon after and all of the parents that were there told them. I was mortified. It was so deeply embarrassing. But I also had a crush on him. So yeah. A little part of me was like, I gotta be kissed.
Yeah.
But also deeply embarrassing.
Yeah.
And that's why I have such a vivid memory of that song.
I had such a crush on him when I went to chorus camp.
Of course.
But it felt like I was supposed to, you know?
Sure.
As I get that. As a gay person looking back, I remember, I have moments where I look back and I go, I remember the moment I decided I'm going to have a crush on them.
Yeah.
And I thought that's what everyone did.
Sure.
It's like, nope. I am going to have a crush on this person.
Yeah.
What?
Why? You don't have to.
You don't have to.
You can choose not to.
Yeah, that is embarrassing.
Yeah. I was thinking about that last night. I was like, I have to tell them. I can't not talk about Oliver.
Yeah.
And not talk about my first kiss.
Yeah.
During.
Well, thank you for sharing that personal story.
You're welcome.
I think, what song is it then in Annie that I'm thinking of? Because
the closest thing that I could think of would be the, like...
I'm not saying it's, like, a literal, like, the exactly
beat by
this,
beat. Right. But, like, the closest thing I could think of is it would need to be still towards the, like, beginning of Grace's arc. Because it's, like, play acting, like, we're getting comfortable with each other, but, yeah. Like, there's no real emotional connection yet. So maybe if it was, like, the movie that's, like, the... Like, it's, like, the NYC number. Or,
that's
like, let's
I'm
go to
of.
The movies. If it was the movie version.
That's what I'm thinking of.
I think it would have to be that song.
But the song, I'd Do Anything, feels very the Oliver Warbucks
sure.
song.
Sure.
Where the two, that's where my two wires yeah. got crossed.
Yeah.
But I just remember listening, watching this at City Center and being like, this is Annie.
Sure.
Which they came out in different times.
Yeah.
So it's Annie copied.
Sure.
But it's just I just think Annie does it in a way that's less convoluted, maybe just more American. Like, it's easier to listen to and easier to it's more palatable.
I think that's, I mean, I don't know what Annie's reputation on the West End is, but I bet they feel similar.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, like, sure, Annie, but like with Oliver, you get all of these exciting, interesting characters.
Well, and the characters are so interesting.
They're so interesting. And that's what I like about this. Not that the adult characters in Annie aren't interesting, but in this there are so many interesting adult characters and not just, like, three or four.
Yeah.
Three. There's three.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of trivia to really talk
sure.
about.
Sure.
There's just so many London revivals of it. There's been 5 productions in London alone. Yeah. Yep, and it ran in London from June 30th, 1960 for 2,618 performances.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, for a really long time. There was supposed to be a revival in the 80s in America on Broadway starring Patti LuPone.
Yes.
As Nancy.
Yes.
And there's this video of her walking up the stairs backwards at the end of As Long As He Needs Me.
Oh.
And she walks off the stage and doesn't really get any claps because it's one of those, like, she finishes the note off stage. And so you don't really, it feels unresolved, which is, I'm getting chills, like, is such good direction, because no one should be clapping after that, you know?
No.
It is, I mean, you want to, because good Lord, what a song. But
yeah,
it is a unresolved feeling that she's having because of her...
Because of her love for him.
Because of her love for him, but also the, you know, horrible abuse she endures. And I also, I mean, we can talk about this later. I don't know if she loves him or if she just so desperately needs love.
Sure. I think that's absolutely an argument you could make.
Yeah. Makes her more tragic.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, especially with the end, which I won't say because I don't want to spoil it for people, even though we're going to spoil it later on. Yeah. Ugh. Nancy is such a, like, devastating character.
Yeah. So devastating. Rowan Atkinson famously played Mr. Bean. That's who you would know him as.
Yes.
Or, oh, look, a drifter from Rat Race.
Or Mr. Mondavarius, right? From Scooby-Doo?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I would know him best as.
He played Fagin in the third London revival in 2009, which is...
That is great casting.
Great casting.
That is great casting. Great, great, great. Solid casting.
Oh, I didn't realize Gavin Lee... I saw him in the playbill for the City Center production, but I was, like, waiting for him to show up, and he never did. He played Fagin.
He was the understudy.
He was the understudy. So I guess there must have been a couple.
I know he got to go on at least once because I have a friend who was like, we're going to go see Raul Esparza as Fagin. I'm so excited. And then they got there and they were like, we're going to see Gavin Lee as Fagin. I'm so excited.
I love Gavin Lee though. He's so good.
I feel like he's an, and maybe this is crazy, but I feel like he's an underutilized talent.
I agree.
Put that bitch on Broadway.
Put that bitch on Broadway. As long as he needs me. Oh, yes. He does. Okay. That's really it. There's not much else that really needs to... there's not much... It's such an old piece.
Yeah.
And so many productions have happened that it's like, you know. Oh, there is one big thing. Sorry. There was a sequel that was supposed to happen. And it's the Jolly Dodger. And
that's honestly, when I was a kid, I was like, I kind of want to be the Artful Dodger. I think I would rather be the Artful Dodger than any other kid role because he's so funny and interesting, and I was really jealous of the little boy who got to play him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it would be the Artful Dodger and Bette is the love interest.
So you're saying I could have had more lines?
Yes.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. But it never happened.
Well, that's okay.
And then there was a movie that was supposed to come out in 2016, another movie, and Samantha Barks was going to play Nancy.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
That is very good casting.
Yeah. Well, she played it in London.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Isn't that how she became...
Eponine?
Yeah, because wasn't there, like, a search for Nancy?
Yes.
And that's where she became famous?
It was, like, the Grease TV show, but it was over there, and it was, like...
But it was for Nancy.
But it was for Nancy. It was, like, I'd do anything.
Yeah.
And, yes. And then she got Oliver because of that, and then...
She won.
Yeah, because she won the show. And then she got to be Eponine, And then she did Ebony in the movie. And then she was in Pretty Woman the musical.
Yeah.
And that was a show I saw on Broadway. And I won't say anything else about it.
Yes. Great. So, this is the story of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world. Aw. It kind of is, though.
Aw. Yeah, kind of.
Nancy. So, this is Act One. So, the musical starts with the kids begging for food. And we find out that they are only fed gruel, which is, you know, disgusting mush.
Yes.
And we get the song Food, Glorious Food from this, which is, and, like, they're just, like, they're begging to, like, have just delicious, like, hot pies and chicken and, you know, whatever. They just, they are imagining the beauty of food because they don't get any. Oliver then gusters up the courage to, and I said gusters and I meant muster, but is that a new word?
Mustards? The courage.
Mustards.
Mustards, because food, glorious food.
Oh, I thought you were being,
it was a joke.
He mustards up the courage to ask for food and gets the, you know, that iconic line, "Please, sir, can I have some more?"
More?
Yeah. And the Widow Corny is a heartless, greedy caretaker, and she sings the song, "Oliver, Oliver." So good. So good.
Yeah.
But Mr. Bumble, who is, like, the owner of this orphanage, which... This show felt just like every show, every musical, or everything that we saw in the, like, early 80s, late 70s was this.
Yes.
So, like, Les Mis, Annie, insert other things here, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Phantom, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know where, but, you know.
Well, I mean, it's such a big musical.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of characters. There's a ton of songs. There's a ton of scenes. There's just a lot.
Yeah.
There's
a lot.
There's just a lot.
Well, these felt very master of the house.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Felt very master of the
house. Which is interesting because there's another pair who also feel like master of the house to me.
Yeah.
And I think I like them better. Although I do love the next song that they sing together.
I Shall Scream.
Oh, Mr. Bumble. I Shall Scream.
So they just, like, they make Oliver feel horrible about that and punish him. Yeah. And then Mrs. Corny pretends to resent Mr. Bumble's attention, but then obviously ends up fucking him.
Yeah.
So,
which is, like, we don't need that song.
We don't.
I love it, but we don't need it.
We don't need it. We don't need it. So then Mr. Bumble then takes Oliver away and walks him down the street yelling, "Boy for sale.
One boy for sale. Going cheap, only 7 pennies. That or thereabout." It's fucking wild.
It is.
It's just wild.
So, okay. Lest we forget, I did not know what happened in this show. And I was like, is this about to be really dark? Like, what? Where are they going to take this?
Where are they selling this boy?
Are we going to get, like, a B plot where he is in serious danger? If you get my drift?
Yes, but different.
Yes, but different.
Yes, but different.
I just was like, is that where we're going with this? Surely not.
Surely not. It's from the 60s.
That's where my brain was.
Sure. That's fair.
But God, I mean, thinking about that, though, someone just walking down the street saying, "I'm selling a young child."
Yeah.
"Do whatever you want with him." For 7 pennies?
Anyone want this boy? I don't want him anymore. It's like a yard sale that you put your kid out on the...
There's a sticker on his forehead.
Just $5.
Yeah, not even.
Yeah, 7 pennies.
Yeah. willing to barter.
Yeah. Honestly, free to a good home.
Yeah, yeah.
Get him out of here.
Yeah, buy my seamless. And so then the people that end up taking him are Mr. Sourberry and Mrs. Sourberry, who are the two funeral apprentice, I'm sorry, two funeral home owners, and they make him the funeral home apprentice, which is, you know, doing deeds for them around the funeral, which best case scenario of a worst case scenario.
Honestly, he could have made a good living as a funeral home owner or funeral director, undertaker, whatever.
Yeah.
He could have had a good life.
Yeah, exactly.
An honest life.
And they sing a song called That's Your Funeral.
Iconic.
Iconic. And it was so fun. Iconic. I loved it so much. And then Oliver is sent downstairs to sleep in the basement with the coffins.
Yeah.
And he sings Where Is Love, which is such a beautiful song.
I love.
And the kid who did it in City Center.
I heard only amazing things.
Have you seen the Playbill video?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. He was so good. The theater, he had to stop. Like, the show stopped because we were clapping so loud.
Wow.
It was amazing. And he just was sitting there, like, he was having to, like, the end of the song is him just, like, sitting on the ground, like, with his head in his hands. Like, well, first he's, like, at the end of the stage, like, you know, holding his pose. And then, like, a good little actor, he, like, slowly moves down to his second pose to, like, start the next scene. But you could feel the actors off stage were like, no, we're letting this clap happen.
Yeah.
And he just was sitting there, like, pretending to cry. They're just waiting for the clap to finish. And
so everyone's like, yeah, he's crying.
Yeah. Woo! Boy for say. but yeah, no, he was so, so, so good. All the kids were so good. That was the true delight of this, was all the kids. Oh my God. Yeah. Were they good?
Oh, I'm sure.
They danced their fucking asses off.
I'm sure. Well, you got all those Music Man kids. They were unemployed. They said, and you would do it too for a check.
Mm-hmm.
What, you want tricks?
Boys, I got tricks.
I've got a trick for you.
Oh my.
A 5, 6, 7, 8.
A 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10, 11, 12. I love that scene in Schitt's Creek. What does she say? The machine gun ballet. This is not for me. What is it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I haven't even looked at Schitt's Creek in a really long time.
Oh, it's so good. Rachel, phone in and tell us what that line is.
Yeah, Rachel, let us know.
Okay, so Where Is Love? Stop the show. The next morning, an employee of the funeral director's insults Oliver's dead mother and, like, just says how, like, horrible of a person she was, like, deserved to die, like, really horrible things. And Oliver gets so pissed and then starts attacking this person, like, punching them, fighting, just like, rah, 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 rah. And the funeral directors try to get him off, and then he runs away. He sprints and runs away. And
they're like, we spent 7 pennies for you. Get back here, boy.
I did a whole musical number. So then he meets up with the Artful Dodger, which is the fun folk of our group. And he comes up and says, and's like, hey, let's come with me. I've got a place you can stay.
Yeah.
And he sings Consider Yourself, which is another iconic song, which I did not know the Artful Dodger sang this.
Oh.
So that was a surprise to me. And the Artful Dodger, he was good.
I mean, you're coming right off of that, like, show-stopping Where Is Love.
So exactly.
It's a pretty hard number to follow.
Yes, but what I will say, he did this hat trick so flawlessly. And I saw maybe their third performance. He did this, like, he had a top hat on, and I can't even think about how he did it, but it was like a, he took it off and it spun it around in his hand and then, like, tried to hand it to Oliver and then did it back to his,
that's so cool.
It was really fancy. And I was like, damn, kiddo, special skills.
It was really fancy. All of a sudden, there was champagne and caviar in my hand. I didn't know what to do.
Wow. Up in the balcony
seats. Encore! Encore!
And they're like, this is what this is. Encores.
Ba-dumsh.
Ba-dumsh. Yes, so... So Oliver doesn't realize what the Dodger does, though. And so Oliver blindly follows him, and he meets Fagin in his lair.
I love Fagin.
And Fagin is great. This is a fun little fact. When the show originally went up, people's criticisms of it was that they were portraying Fagin as... So Fagin is a villainous character in this, and it is originally played by a Jewish person, and some of the criticisms of the show were saying that you're saying that Jewish people are villains and criminals. And
greedy.
And greedy, yeah, yeah, exactly. Which, maybe they were back then.
Maybe they were.
But this is just a badass character, in my opinion.
See, and some people would call him the villain, but I would say... What did he really do to these kids besides give them a roof over their heads, a job, and food in their little bellies?
Yeah. Right.
Sounds to me like that's a dad.
Well, he is a, like, sympathetic villain.
Sure.
He still is a villainous character because he's greedy and uses the kids for sure. His own financial gain.
Sure.
But he is protecting them.
Absolutely.
But he is, and genuinely loves them.
Genuinely loves them. And, like, loves them even as they grow up.
Yes.
Which is, I think, one of the reasons why I'm like, villain to who? Not to me. That's my hero.
I mean, he, he's kind of like an anti-hero.
Definitely.
Right? Like... In a show where most of the adults are villains,
yeah,
he is a saving grace.
He's really Oliver's, like, first soft place to land.
Yep. Yeah. And he teaches Oliver to be...
financially independent.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think he teaches Oliver that his skills of, you know, knowing when things are wrong is a good thing.
Yeah.
And he can use those powers for good.
Yeah. Trust your intuition.
Trust your intuition. And he's a protector. Yeah. Yeah. I love Fagin.
Fagin is the best.
Raul Esparza was...
Of course. Brilliant.
So that's good.
Brilliant casting. And it's I heard brilliant. Gavin Lee was also brilliant. Because I'm that sure. is also... Brilliant casting. Very There's a casting. Laundry list of people I would love to see play Fagin.
Yeah.
Love.
Not shocking. I was watching and being like, this is a woman's role.
I find they're always a woman's role.
Yeah. But this is the role that I think a woman should be.
Sure.
Like a lesbian woman who maybe is a little on the plus side.
And has bleach blonde hair.
Bleach blonde hair. Maybe from the South.
Maybe. Okay, a Southern Fagin. That could be very interesting. Very interesting.
I did have an idea.
Mm-hmm. Copyright us. Copyright us.
Copyright, 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 copyright. About doing Oliver in a trailer park.
Absolutely.
And I'd it be being so all, like, Southern people.
Yeah.
And I think it would be such an easy transition.
Sure.
So I'm just curious.
It would be very easy. To do that, and it's great that we have the copyright on that idea. And if anyone does it, A, we'll know they're a listener. B, we'll know they're a thief.
Yeah, thief. And then it's like, we're talking about Oliver. What did you think we were going to do? We were obviously going to steal.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole thing.
Well, anyways.
Anywho.
I mean, think about, consider yourself.
At home. Consider yourself.
Something that I can bring up.
Yeah.
That I have, I don't know if I've ever brought up on the podcast, is 12 Steps the Musical.
Ugh!
Our opening number, the reason I know Consider Yourself so well, is because our opening number from 12 Steps the Musical, the first show I ever did in New York, don't look it up, I mean it. The opening number was something along the lines of, like, there's nothing like New York, which is consider yourself
at home.
At home. And the whole number was a ripoff of Consider Yourself. The entire number. Very fun. Very fun.
To Broadway.
To Broadway. Yeah. So let's get back to this.
Consider Yourself. Let's go meet Fagin, the super cool.
Let's go meet Fagin.
Hero of the story.
Yeah. So Fagin is a criminal and he now teaches young kiddos. He's an older criminal. So he's got younger kiddos like helping him steal and make money. Mm-hmm. And he's teaching them how to pickpocket. And Oliver is so unaware of any criminal behavior happening that he just assumes that the boys are making handkerchiefs rather than stealing handkerchiefs. Because there's so many handkerchiefs around. He goes, oh, how do you make these?
Idiot.
Silly little idiot.
Idiot boy.
So then the next day, Oliver meets Nancy, who is a member of Fagin's gang and is the girlfriend of this terrifying figure that we had not really met yet, and that is Bill Sykes. Everyone is terrified of Bill Sykes, and we know that he is a brutal person. He's a house burglar, and he really, really abuses Nancy, and she endures it because of her love for him.
Yeah.
And everyone's really worried about Nancy, but Nancy's like, I'm fine. That dick is good.
Don't worry about me.
Nancy has a young friend named Bette who is a 15-year-old lass who, idolizes Nancy and is just learning how to be a woman
and
from her.
Always played by an incredibly talented young up-and-comer with real star power. Always. Traditionally, it's always, like, the next Patti LuPone.
Yeah. And you played tree number 3 in this, correct? I thought I remember you saying
it's weird,
that.
There's no trees in London.
Which is why it was so weird that they cast you as that.
No, I played Bette. Okay. I'm a star!
Stop taking pictures! Did you see the pic? There's a picture of Rose's Turn, all the lyrics on Google, and it's the beginning of Rose's Turn, and then it goes, stop, stop, stop,
stop,
stop taking me. Someone changed the lyrics on Google.
That's so funny.
So good. Love that. Ugh. Okay, so we then get to hear why Nancy is so okay with her life in the song It's a Fine Life, and she discusses why, you know, she's cool with how it is.
Yeah.
She's happy. And Oliver then, bows to Nancy and trying to be polite and a gentleman. So sweet. And everyone makes fun of him. Mm-hmm. And so then Nancy singles out the Dodger, the Artful Dodger, to demonstrate the way that rich people treat each other in the podcast favorite, I'd Do Anything.
I'd Do Anything.
And they just do, like, a vaudevillian, like,
yeah.
This is how rich people act.
Yeah.
And it's very cute. We've got elegance. We've got elegance. Oh, I love that song.
Oh,
not from this show, folks. Not from this show.
No, but somewhere.
So that's somewhere. So then Nancy and Bette leave, and then Oliver is set out with the boys to do his first pickpocketing job. And they move through the crowd, and they are pickpocketing really seamlessly and easily. Oliver had not done any pickpocketing. He gets nervous and doesn't do it. But then someone drops one of their... someone drops a scarf, and he's like... And he goes to give it back to them, but they assume that he's stealing it.
Poor kid. Poor kid. Ugh.
And, oh, excuse me, I'm saying this wrong. He does not drop it. The Artful Dodger steals it, but then they almost get caught, and then Oliver has it in his hands, and then and they like run away, and Oliver's left alone, and then the old man, Mr. Brownlow, says, "Hey, you stole that," and then end of act one. So
rough. It's a rough place to be
for an orphan.
For an orphan. It's a rough place to be for an orphan.
Act two. We are in a bar or a pub, excuse me, because we are in London. And there we come up with Nancy is striking up a song, an old tavern song for the ruffians in the pub called Oompa-pa, and they all are just having a grand old time. A great act two opener. So fun. Great. Everyone's happy.
Yeah.
And then we find Bill Sykes. This is a great writing moment where they do this beautiful Oompa-pa song where you see Nancy being so happy.
So and joyful.
So joyful. And then the immediacy of like Bill coming in, and it's so dark, and it's the stillest moment in the whole show so far. And he sings this dreadfully
strong men. Like
baritone song called My Name. Oh. And it's the first time we've ever seen Bill. And terrifying.
He's terrifying, but it's also, this is the first time we see him. We've only heard about him by name. Mm-hmm. And we already know that we should be afraid of him based on what we have heard about him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just reinforcing that in the song, My Name, which is just like, oh, it's so good. It's so good. And Bill Sykes is like the true villain of this show.
He's yeah.
Like the worst of the worst. But God, what a great role.
Yeah.
Jack Posey played this role.
Oh, that's right.
And so now I'm like, he's not that scary. Jack played him. Jack's not scary. Jack
would be a good Fagin.
Jack would be a great Fagin when he's a little older.
Yeah.
When he's a little older.
Oh my God. I forgot that he played that. That's right.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But it's also like, that's great casting for him too.
Very good casting for him.
Bill Sykes.
So then after we finally meet Bill Sykes, Dodger runs and tells Fagin that Oliver has been captured, and he is no longer, like, he's captured by the police because of the Brownlow household. So everyone's so worried that Oliver is going to betray them to the authorities, and if that happens, Bill Sykes is going to be so violent with all of them. So it's not just like, oh, I'm scared about going to jail. That's the least of their worries. It's Bill is their biggest worry.
Yeah.
Because if they're caught, Bill is caught.
Yeah.
And Bill is not going to have that. So Fagin and Bill decide to capture Oliver from the authorities. However, we find, well, yes. So they're going to go capture Oliver and bring him back to make sure that he doesn't do anything. Nancy, who's still in love with Bill, is like, I don't want you to do that. Like, let's think of another solution. Yeah,
let's just leave him alone.
Yeah, like, don't have him come back here and then you, like, are violent with him. Like, please, no, he's a child. But then they leave, and then Nancy sings As Long As He Needs Me Alone on stage, which Lily Cooper sang the house down on this song.
Woo! You know, and maybe this is, like, an unpopular opinion, but I do really feel like this song is secretly one of the best female songs in the musical theater canon.
I agree,
but I don't feel like people don't think about it, in my experience.
Sure. I think that this is one of the strongest female songs for a, like, classic musical for a female, because there's so much happening within it. Because it could easily just be, oh, as long as he needs me, because, you know, I'm abused and whatever, but if he needs me, like, I'll do it. Which, yeah, that's the basis.
Yeah.
But there's so much happening underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with the rest of the show, like, seeing how joyful of a person she is and how good she is to everyone.
Yeah.
And she's just such an empathetic soul that she gets taken advantage of by people who are just users and thieves of energy and people. And there's such an underbelly of it. And she knows that she is worth more, but she's never had better.
Yeah.
I think, at least I'll say it like that. That maybe she doesn't think she's worth more, but it doesn't come across that she thinks low of herself. I think she just...
Maybe it's not that she, like... Because I definitely don't think she thinks, like, poorly of herself. But if the only thing you've ever known is, you know, what you're getting...
Yeah.
And, like, even in her song that we're introduced to her, like, It's a Fine Life, if you don't mind taking it like it turns out, it's a fine life.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind just taking things as they come, life is fine.
Yeah.
But, like, you could actively choose to take different things and not just take things as they come.
Right.
And she doesn't, because that's all she knows.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a matter of, like, not feeling like she deserves more. It's not knowing how to get that, because all she knows is taking the crumbs.
Yeah.
Ugh. She's so... It's the devastating.
Yeah.
It's devastating.
It's so devastating. Well, and as long as he needs me, not as long as he wants me.
As long as he needs me.
Yeah. If I'm useful...
Yeah.
I'll stay.
Yeah.
So then they go, so now we're at Mr. Brownlow's house, which is the rich older gentleman that we met from Oliver getting taken away. And then we find Oliver at Mr. Brownlow's house, and they're super happy. And Mr. Brownlow's like, you know, once you told me the story of how those kids like left you, I decided that maybe I shouldn't turn you into the police.
Yeah.
And I just want you to stay here and be happy and healthy, and we'll figure it out. Which is like, what? Beautiful.
So nice.
So nice. So, like, such a turn of events. So, Mr. Brownlow and some of his assistants decide that Oliver is now, like, well enough, because he was obviously sick and, you know, malnourished. He's finally well enough to go outside. So he sends Oliver out to purchase some books and return some books to a bookseller. And the people are like, oh my God, no, he's going to steal your things. You don't know this kid. And he goes, no, I think he's a good one. Let's see. So he sends him out and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
In the City Center production, I don't know if this is, like, in the script, this is when someone drops something, and Oliver picks it up and gives it, and, like, pats them on the back and, like, gives it back to them. And it's such a moment of, like, oh, he's a good kid.
He's just a good kid.
He's so just a good
boy.
He's a good boy. But then Bill and Fagin grab Oliver and bring him back to Fagin's. Nancy saves Oliver from a beating from Bill, and Fagin gets all the other boys to, like, leave. Like, run. Go, 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 go. They try to smooth things over with Bill and remind him, like, he's a little kid. He's not going to do anything. Let's just make sure that he doesn't. But, like, please don't beat him.
Yeah.
You know?
Please don't beat him. Pretty please.
Yes. Left alone, Fagin ponders if his life were different and, like, how he could make changes in his life, because this is, like, not it anymore.
One of the best songs in the whole show.
So good. Reviewing
the situation. Honestly, maybe the best song in the whole show.
It's a great song.
I have to really think on that, but I love that song.
Yeah. And then he realizes there's numerous excuses and he just stays how he is.
Yeah.
Great. There, we also find out earlier that Fagin has one thing to his name that no one else can touch, and it is a collection of, like, diamonds and diamond, like, tiaras and bracelets. And in the City Center production, and I don't know if this is something that happens in all productions, Fagin has a moment where he, like, puts the tiara on and, like, is so, like, enraptured with how he looks. And I wonder if it's, like, a nod to Fagin being, since he's a lone man, like, in this world, maybe he is, he's homosexual, and that also could be Raul Esparza's take.
Of course.
And, you know, because it wasn't a huge plot point by any means, but it was a moment, like, that kind of changes how you look at Fagin, which I thought was really interesting.
Absolutely.
But he hides that underneath the floor, and it's his one possession that he always has, as if I ever need to flee, I have this that I can sell, and I have a life for myself.
It's his running money.
But he also never wants to sell it. It's something that's really special to him. So, back at the workhouse, which is where Oliver was first found in our show, Mr. Bumble and Widow Corny are now unhappily married, and are told by the dying pauper, this old woman who's dying, comes in and tells them news that, as I'm dying, I need to get this news off my chest, that the boy was left at childbirth by a woman named Agnes, and she had a locket. This kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, it's such an odd... I mean, it's so important, the story, but it literally comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And this woman comes in and says, like, this woman, Agnes, died during childbirth, and I left the boy on the stairs, and she left a locket, but I kept it with me all these years. Here's the locket. And she died during childbirth, so here. And old Sally had stolen this locket and kept it for herself, but then gives it to Widow Corny and then dies. It's her last dying, like,
great,
you know, in the City Center production.
Yeah.
This was so out of context. Like, it just was so weird. Mm-hmm. And they leaned into how weird it was. The woman died right behind Widow Corny and Mr. Bumble. And then the only way to get off stage for her, she dragged herself off the stage after she died. It was so funny, but it was so out of place. But it was so funny. And I love to have a little bit of levity in a show like this.
Absolutely.
So then we realize, Mr. Bumble and Mrs. Bumble realize that they can be wealthy, and so they sing a happy chant of Oliver, Oliver, and they go to find Mr. Brownlow, who has advertised the news to find Oliver, and they hope to profit by profit from any reward given for the information of where Oliver might be or who Oliver is.
Yeah.
So Mr. Brown realizes that they're not interested, though, in Oliver's welfare, but only about the money, and then throws them out.
Slay King.
Recognizing the picture of the locket, though, picture inside the locket, he realizes that Oliver is his grandson because his daughter was Agnes. And this makes everyone, you know, care for him a little bit more.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wait, we're blood.
We're blood.
Blood?
Which is like, okay. All right. We really, the fates really aligned there, didn't they?
Yep.
Nancy visits Mr. Brownlow and explains how she and Bill took Oliver, and that's where he is, and promises to deliver Oliver to him safely that night at the London Bridge, but she will not give up who else is involved. And Mr. Brownlow is like, please let me save you from this, like, you know, I think he sees his daughter and Nancy. And,
absolutely.
Yeah,
does.
Like, please let me help you. So she ponders about how she will never do that because as long as he needs me, I will be there for him. And sings a reprise of As Long As He Needs Me.
Oh.
Yes, I know.
Hit him with your car.
So Bill, though, suspects foul play from Nancy and follows her to the London Bridge that night. He then confronts her and the kiddo Oliver, and then viciously clubs Nancy to death. Like, you hear her sing, "As long as he needs me, reprise." And then the next thing you see happen to her is her get violently killed.
Murdered.
By him.
Yeah.
And she, I'm curious if it's written this way or what, but I think she knows it's going to happen when she goes to take, when she sings "As Long As He Needs Me" reprise. I think she's aware that he's going to kill her.
I mean...
Or at least she's going to get hurt really bad.
I think she definitely thinks, and like, I've never been in a physically abusive relationship, but I can imagine, as someone who has been in emotionally abusive situations, that you, it's similar in that you can kind of guess when something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And you kind of, especially at a certain point of knowing that person, you can, you have an idea of what that cycle is and when they're going to go, when it's going to get bad again. Mm-hmm. And I think that she knows that this is going to be bad.
I just think it's a really strong choice.
It's,
to be,
yeah,
like, no, I know this is going to happen and I've made this decision. It's almost "As Long As He Needs Me" is her goodbye.
Yeah. It's just so sad. And it is also frustrating because it's like, he could have saved you. You could have been saved. And I understand that you love him and as long as he needs you. But, and I also have always thought that the reprise of "As Long As He Needs Me" is more about Oliver than it is about Bill.
Oh, sure.
Because I think if we're leaning into the idea that she knows, she can kind of foresee, like, it's going to be really bad, I might not make it through this, then she's not really thinking about Bill. And as long as he needs me, I'll be around. It's as long as Oliver needs me, I'll be around.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Absolutely.
That's, you know, just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, no. I just wonder what her thoughts are as she, like, you know, goes up to her yeah, death, especially because, like, yeah, I mean, it also, this is directly after he says, like, "Turn those people in." She's like, "I won't."
True.
Because as long as he needs me.
Oh, it's about both of them. I'm looking it up right now. So, yeah, he's mine and I'm his. I've got to go back. I want to go back. He don't act as though he cares, but deep inside I know he cares. As long as he needs me, I know where I must be, but will he never see that someone else needs me?
Yes.
As long as life is long, I'll love him right or wrong, but something just as strong says someone else needs me. A child with no one to take his part. I'll take his part, Bill, but cross my heart, I won't betray your trust. So mm-hmm. It's about both of them.
Right. So then I think it's her saying, my intentions are shifting.
Yeah.
To, like, you know, meld our two thoughts together.
Yeah.
Where then the underbelly is, but when I know that now that my intentions have shifted, he's no longer going to need me. And that will end, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe she understands. And this is all just, like, actory. You know, yeah, this is not, like, this actually is what all, it is.
Yeah. I mean, Lily Cooper, write in, let us know.
Yeah. I wonder if it's, I won't, or what was I just about to say before I interrupted my own thought?
My intentions are shifting.
Oh, maybe it's the realization that if he doesn't need me anymore, then he will make sure no one ever needs me again. You know, kind of a
yeah.
thing. And then this is her plea of maybe he'll realize that someone needs me, a child.
Yeah.
Not just someone else needs me. she then says, a child needs me.
Yeah.
To protect him. So yeah. That's why she pleads when she goes to die. Because, like, it's not like, please save my life. Like, please let me protect him. Please, please, please. And, of course, that doesn't work.
Of course. Mm-hmm. I am curious, because I know that it's a romantic relationship between the two. Of, like, had she ever gotten pregnant? Mm-hmm. And maybe there's some underlying, like, and this is all conjecture. There's nothing in the text to support this, but if as an actor you could think that, like, maybe she has been through something where Bill has taken a child from her before. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this maybe feels like a child that she feels like she can save.
Yeah.
But she couldn't save one before. Possibly. You could play that as an idea for her, but yeah, Nancy is such a tragic character.
It's so, so tragic. Painful. What if you thought about it this way too, that maybe she's been, this is real dark, so, like, you know, trigger warning, but, like, if she's been so abused that maybe she can't have children.
Maybe. Yeah.
And this is her, and which makes It's a Fine Life, you know, a little bit stronger, because it is, if you just take things how it is, it's fine. We're fine.
Yeah.
You know, and you genuinely, like, just keep going. But then this is where it, you know, it comes out. Because, yeah. And that's why she's, like, a mother to all those kids. And
exactly. She takes Bette under her wing, probably to protect her from, like, something like her getting caught up with a Bill Sykes type.
Yeah.
No, Nancy, it's crazy. Like, I understand that this show and this story is about Oliver and his journey. But, like, Nancy's story feels so much more important. Maybe it's because I'm a woman.
Maybe.
But her story just feels so much more important to me.
Yeah.
And Oliver's story is just the, like, vessel that kind of brings us there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The show's not really about Oliver.
No. No.
Like, other than the first act.
Yeah, the first act is all Oliver. The second act, less so.
Well, it's not even all Oliver in the first act. It's Oliver is the person who brings us to meet these people.
Yeah.
But he is not the focus of the conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's just like the...
He's the median. He's the audience's way in.
Yeah.
He's the stand-in for the audience.
Mm-hmm. Because he sings Where Is Love, and then he doesn't really sing again.
Yeah.
Not really.
No, he doesn't have any other solos besides that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he found love quickly, actually. Yeah, like, with Fagin.
With Fagin and the gang, and then with the old rich man, and he found Where Is Love right there.
Yeah,
or there, or with Nancy. She loves him. But anyway, Nancy gets clubbed to death.
Yeah, a large crowd forms after Mr. Brunlow discovers Nancy's body, because he runs in just a couple seconds after. And a crowd forms, and everyone finds Bill, and they get him brought into jail, and he's...
Interesting. That's not how I remember it ending. You want me to tell you... Look, I did Oliver just over a decade ago. What happened at the end, and, like, maybe it's a different situation, but what happened at the end of Oliver when I did it at the Surrey Arts Council in Mount Airy, North Carolina, Bill Sykes dies. Bill Sykes gets, like, pushed off of, like, a... Because they're at the bridge. He gets pushed by someone. There's, like, a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls. And when he falls, like, a rope gets wrapped around his neck. And he dies. That's what happened in our production. I don't remember what happens in the script. I don't know if that's part of it. I don't know if they maybe didn't do that at City Center.
This is what happens. That's not what happens in this production. Okay. That that's close to.
Okay.
He sees, so he doesn't get arrested. The Artful Dodger gets arrested. And he goes to a hideout and he gets a memory of Nancy. Like, he's holding Oliver, threatening him. And he sees a memory of Nancy and it makes him freeze. And then two policemen sneak up on him and then shoots Bill when he tries to get Oliver.
Mm.
Yeah. That's how.
Interesting.
That's how it ends here. Wow. And then Oliver is reunited with Mr. Brunlow. Fagin disappears in a reviewing the situation reprise.
Some people died.
Yep.
Because I gotta sell that crown.
Yeah, right. He doesn't, I don't think he has that anymore. He had to give it up.
Right.
Ugh. Yeah, Bill made sure he gave it up.
Fucking Bill.
I know.
He got better than he deserved.
Yeah. And then the show ends with Fagin leaving.
He said, goodbye.
Goodbye now.
Goodbye. Consider yourself at home. And it's like a big happy. They do an Oliver mega mix.
Yeah. Rough. You know what I'm realizing? Because when I saw it at City Center, I was like, why? It's so weird that he's like, her eyes. Like, there was no... Bill, I'm talking about. Bill yeah. says, her eyes, and then gets killed.
Yeah.
I wondered why he said that, and I was very confused about it. But now, after our discussion about Nancy's purpose at the end of the show,
yeah,
it was as long as he needs me. She still protected Oliver.
Yeah.
She was protecting him. She was, in some form of it, was haunting Bill.
Yeah.
And saved Oliver in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Wow. God, Nancy's a good character.
Nancy's a great character. Actually, you know what? Now that I'm like really thinking on it, and maybe I'm making this up in my head, but in the production that I did as a kid, I feel, because I remember they brought me on stage to like cry about Nancy being dead. Mm-hmm. But I think that it was like looking at Bette, because Bette is just simply a young Nancy.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. Like, he saw the Nancy in Bette, I think.
Yeah.
And it was like, her eyes.
Oh, sure.
Or something like that. Because I do vividly remember being like, oh, Nancy.
Yeah.
You're dead.
You're dead.
I'm so sad.
You're dead.
You're dead, kid.
You're dead, kiddo. You're dead.
But wow, Oliver, you know what? I think that I like this show more than I thought I did. Or more than I remember.
I did not love it when, this is what I was like, should I say this or should I wait? So City Center condensed it to an hour and 45 minutes.
That is a brisk.
Yeah.
Charles Dickens show.
Yeah, it was real brisk. And they cut a lot of the dialogue, I think. It was just kind of like music. I wonder maybe if it wasn't cut so much that maybe it would have felt a little bit, stronger. I don't know.
Sure.
However, I didn't love the book very much. Like, I really thought it was, there's just so much information.
Well, I can't imagine getting all of that information in an hour and 45 minutes.
Right.
It's a lot of information for a 2.5 hour full length show.
Yeah.
That's taken 45 minutes off of it.
Yeah.
That's wild to me. And the fact that they kept like the Mr. Bumble, I shall scream. Because I assume they kept that.
I don't remember, if I'm being honest.
Oh, that's fine. But,
I mean, it was Mary Testa and Brad Oscar, so they probably gave
them.
You
gotta give them that.
Yeah, they gave them. I mean, I was shocked, though, that they had such little stage time.
Yeah. Honest. Well, actually, no, you couldn't. I was about to say you could double them for the funeral directors, yeah, but you can't because Mr. Bumble talks to the funeral directors.
Yeah.
Well,
those characters seem so similar to me.
They're so similar. Yeah, you could, and I love the funeral directors. I love that plot line. You could cut it.
Yeah.
You could cut it and just have Oliver run away.
I mean, you need the Where is Love moment, though.
Sure. Have it at the little orphanage. He gets, like, thrown in the basement, cries. Although I love that he's fucking surrounded by coffins. How dark and twisted and gaunt.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You could, as much as I love That's Your Funeral, and I think that if I don't start seeing that in, like, cabarets, I'm gonna punch some people.
Yeah.
That's your funeral. That's your funeral. Come on. Yeah. If we're gonna do it, an ooky spooky Halloween cabaret, you better fucking have That's Your Funeral.
Yeah. Work.
Or else. Oh, yeah. No, I think this show, I obviously have a lot of, like, memories attached to this show. And it's crazy how much sticks with you after time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I've also never seen it. I've never seen Oliver. I've only been in it.
Yeah.
So I can only say that, like, it was fun to do.
Yeah.
I had a good time doing it as a kid.
Yeah.
Food Glory's food, a blast.
Yeah.
They gave us all, like, metal bowls. Like, dink, dink. And we, like, clapped them together at certain points. It was fun. But we always had the, like, don't drop the bowls. Yeah. Don't slam the bowls. They're so loud. but yeah, that's Oliver.
That's Oliver.
Let's Dreamcast this bitch.
Yeah.
So while you were doing the synopsis, I did have a thought for one other character that I Dreamcast, and that's the old woman who stole the locket.
Okay.
So great. Obviously, I think we agree for the kids.
We're not casting the kids.
Cast a good kid.
Cast an unknown.
I don't want to see a nepotism baby.
No.
Play Oliver. I'm not interested. So from there, I'll start with Fagin, if that's good. Or do you want me to start with the old woman who stole the locket?
Start with the old woman who stole the locket.
The old woman who stole the locket. I don't know why, but as you're telling me this, I'm like, oh my God, it needs to be like the old woman from Gentleman's Guide.
I knew that's who you were going to say.
It has to be her.
You know who that is. That's Mama Cosma.
Right.
From Fairly Odd Parents.
That's right. I remember you telling me that when we did our Gentleman's Guide episode. No, it's got to be her.
Yeah.
It's got to be her. She's the best choice. And imagining her dragging herself off stage. That's fucking funny. She's got the timing for it. So her. Funeral directors. Did you cast the funeral directors?
Yeah.
Great. I did too. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
You seem very excited.
I am very excited because I can't think of anyone else that I would rather see as the funeral directors.
I really hope it's the same. I bet. Well, is it a duo?
It's a duo.
It might be the same people.
It might be the same people. Do we want to try it? 3, 2, 1.
But it's two people.
It's a duo. So
we'd have to say both of their names at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Who are you starting with?
The guy.
Okay, great.
Great. So we'll do 3, 2, 1, say the names.
Are you saying they're first and last?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Andy, Eugene, Carl, and Orfe.
This wasn't gonna work. Okay, finish your thought then.
Andy, Carl, and Orfe. This is who I want to see as the... Come, like...
Yeah.
It's like, I joke around that, like, I want them to do something on stage together.
Yeah.
And I do. Like, I do genuinely want them to be on stage together. But I think that having them play the funeral directors makes sense.
It does. I mean, Andy Carl is so funny.
He's so funny. He's doing Groundhog Day again.
I know, I saw.
Andy, we're so proud of you, bud.
So proud. But Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara...
Absolutely. I mean, look, if we were doing the movie, absolutely.
I'd see them on stage.
I would see them on stage, too, but I don't think they'd do it on stage.
You don't know that.
It's true. You know what? That's true. I don't know that. I'm just assuming they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But, no, I would love that.
Yeah.
Very, Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah. Or her and Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I think of.
Absolutely.
If you don't let me get this house. If you don't let me get this house, I'm going to lose it.
Yeah. All I could think was the, it's not even her, it's a line from fucking 30 Rock where Jenna's like, don't be dramatic, that's my thing. Or don't be dramatic or I'll kill myself. And then you, or something like that. It's the same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
The same energy. Great. So, love that. Bill Sykes, I cast, my first thought, even though I think he's too old now, is like Michael Cerveris. Feels like an obvious choice to me.
Yeah.
For Bill Sykes, when he was younger.
That, I mean, that bleeds perfectly into who I cast, which is Stephen Pascal.
Absolutely.
Pascale.
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 Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think either of them. And then I honestly think Ramin would be
a good
solid choice. And it'll be fun for him to do something that's not suave and charming.
True.
You know? Jumping right from Funny Girl to Bill Sykes and Oliver. Yeah.
I ran into What's Her Face yesterday.
What's Her Face? You're kidding.
From Funny Girl. What's her name?
Leah Michele?
No.
Julie Benko?
Yes, Julie Benko.
I'm obsessed with her.
She was in the Sweet Green Line. She walked up behind me and I went, oh, I love you. You were so talented.
What'd she say?
She's like, oh, thank you.
That's really nice.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm so excited to come see you. I just closed a show and I'm definitely going to come see you. And she was like, well, you have to Memorial Day, so.
And you're like, I'll be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be there. Oh, I love her. Well, that's actually funny because I did think of her for the next role, Nancy. It's like, I feel like she'd be an interesting Nancy. That's not ultimately who I cast, but her name did cross my mind.
Yeah, she would be cute.
Yeah.
She's really talented.
She's very talented. But ultimately, and I feel like I cast her in a lot of things.
Bonnie Milligan?
No, but Bonnie Milligan would be a great pick. I cast Ava Noblezada.
Yeah. Funny you say that, because I cast Lea Salonga.
What?
Yeah.
I feel like Lea Salonga played this part. Or am I making that up? Maybe I'm making that up.
It's not my dream.
Sure, of course. I feel like she played it, but I also could be like, no, that's just Fonte.
They only had one American revival, really. I mean, the second one barely even happened, and it was Patti LuPone.
True.
And they've only had one revival.
Yeah.
And it was barely happened. And now this one. So there wouldn't have been a time that she could play it.
True. Not even in London? She did things in London.
I guess.
Nope, she didn't. It's just Fontaine. That's why I'm like, no, yeah, she's definitely done it.
Yeah.
Just Fontaine. Yeah. That is funny.
Yeah.
And then last but certainly not least, the best character in the whole show, Fagin. I feel super confident about this casting. And that is Mr. Danny Burstein.
Oh, that is good.
Right?
I said Wesley Taylor.
Also great casting. Different.
Very different.
A very different energy.
Yeah.
But good casting.
Yeah. I also said Jen Coella. I'm trying to think of any other women that I'm like, oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure there are. I just can't think of them right now.
Me.
Of course.
I'd love to see Garrett in this part.
As Fagin? Yeah.
It'd be really interesting.
It would be very interesting. A little Papa. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit of Papa.
A light sprinkling of Papa. Oh, well. That's Oliver.
That's all, folks.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to talk about us to your friends. Rate, review. Follow, subscribe, whatever it is that you like to do, you freaky little perverts. And then our next episode is going to be The Light in the Piazza.
The Light in the Piazza.
Another musical that takes place in a different country. More. So maybe that's a little bit of the theme.
Winston Salem.
Oh, I love that show. I'm so excited to talk about it. That's it. Thanks again. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, bitch.
Okay. Goodbye. We love you.
Bye. Oh, happy Pride Month.
Oh, my God. Happy Pride. Is there anything gayer than City Center Encores?
No.
Nope. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to This Podcast Won't Run a Week. If you'd like to support us, be sure to rate, review, follow, like, and subscribe wherever you listen. If you're interested in additional very cool content, you can head over to patreon.com/thispodcastwon'trunaweek. You can check out all of our social media information as well as performance links in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening. We love you lots. Goodbye.